All right, so this is a teleclass for December 2nd. We've got Jeff, Jeremy, Steve, Ramon, Peter, and Rue. How's everybody doing? So usually we start these off with wins or challenges. I'd like to continue that tradition. Anybody got anything they want to offer up?
This is Jeremy. I'll just go quick win. I think I was talking to Ramon yesterday, and it felt like that, you know, we've got a lot of things going on right now, but we're also planning our retreat and being able to kind of the preparation before we go into the retreat. I just feel like we're in a really good place, and Ramon and I have been having good discussions. Jeff and I have been having a lot of good discussions, and so I think it's just using a lot of the tools that we've learned over this year and then and really putting them into practice and preparing to come into that retreat makes me feel a lot more confident that we're going to have a successful, productive retreat. So,
Good. Very nice. Yeah, I remember in our work session for the quarter, there was a little bit of concern about the amount of time the retreat prep was going to take versus the amount of time left before the retreat. So it's good to hear that you guys feel you're ahead.
Yeah.
Awesome. Anyone else?
Yeah, this is Peter. I had some success in teaching the initiative success formula to Johnny. One of the things that Jeff and I had talked about was putting together a department initiative success formula. And previously, I've been a little bit timid in, you know, introducing that stuff to team members who aren't in this call. But this time, I took a stab at it and felt pretty good about kind of explaining the purpose and the reason why the initiative success formula is important. You know, and having the conversation with Johnny, he felt like that was really engaging. He saw the importance of how it tied in with the 2x2 and how it could help us focus on core behaviors and key things that drive our department. So I took a stab at that, did a draft, sent it to Jeff and to Johnny. But just felt good that I, you know, finally took the chance to kind of open up and explain it, even though it's not 100% confident in it. You know, I did my best to kind of explain my thought process behind the purpose, and just feel like that's a good step in me starting to grasp the material a little bit better. So that was a win for me.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's the big thing, right, is just getting over that initial inertia and just teaching someone one of these concepts, because I think the curve on how you relate to the concept, it can go actually quite quickly with just one cycle of teaching it. So, nice. Thank you for sharing that. Ramon? Jeff? Steve?
Ramon, I'm going to, my discussion is a little bit of both a challenge and a success. The success, well, the challenge is establishing the discipline to hold myself accountable for my weekly focus and daily focus and sticking to that structure that I'm placing on myself. And Jeremy and I have discussed that, and so we're trying to balance off each other to do so. The success is that I'm starting to do it, and but it's hard. You know, kind of like what I posted last night. And that's also a success because I said I want to post something, and it doesn't matter what I get out there, but get whatever's on my mind out there so that I can start building the reps to start doing that, to keep that commitment. So that's a success, but it's also a challenge. So a little bit of both, but just trying to approach this quarter a lot differently. Shoot for the goal of 80%, and so that's where I stand. I mean, just working on my personal focus things and getting a weekly posting out there. So that is a challenge and a success.
Nice. I appreciate you bringing a challenge to the table. I I can relate, right? That personal discipline is sometimes really, really difficult, and the only person who can change it is you, and it's not always easy. Steve, Jeff?
For me, probably the biggest win, Jeff's just done such a great job working with the team and preparing for the retreat with the 2x2s and the road maps. He's really done a lot of coaching with the one-on-one with several of these tools. So I've personally noticed more energy in using these tools in the last few weeks. So I think it's coming together really nicely, and I think it's just having that one-on-one time with Jeff to take real world examples and applying it in the work that we're doing, and just having Jeff coach them and then review it with them and follow up, as opposed to just kind of going off on your own and doing it and coming back to the call and reporting your work. So I think that's what I'm noticing is our biggest win for it.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in, and it's the biggest challenge is we're all wrestling with is, and there's no answer, is bringing the tools into the real world. Steve just said it, you know, and the challenge for Ramon and Jeremy particularly is, but for all of us, you know, to make sure there's not the sort of there's the real world. Oh, and then by the way, I do Sagan, you know, and bringing those tools into daily practice and bringing them into the, you know, the daily rhythms and actually using them and maintaining the discipline is, I think, you know, the biggest challenge for all of us, where you do it once and then you gradually wander off, you know, off the ranch and go back to bad habits. So, you know, keeping those two worlds connected and, as one is I think the big challenge.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think that, you know, we even see that with our clients sometimes, that it's pretty easy to go back. We call it going back to sleep. I mean, Steve, you're pretty familiar with that term, as Rand uses it in the IOP, but I think the concept at least applies here, right? If you're not conscious and aware and intentional about what you're choosing to do and use and implement from this program, it's pretty easy to just go back to status quo. Great. Well, I appreciate you guys sharing some of these wins and challenges and thoughts. As promised, I know Jay went over the self-assignment or the self-assessment and then assignments in the last work session or in the last coaching session. I wanted to just touch on those quickly to make sure everybody's clear on what you need to do and actually have done it. And so what I thought would be useful is going one by one and just checking in to see how this has come along for you. I've got everybody's printed out surveys here and want to just see if you've made progress or if there's any questions. So I'll start with Jeremy. Do you want to just give us what your two assignments are going to be?
I wanted to work with Vance and then also use some accountability practices with he and I, and making sure that our weekly focus is really embedded. And so that's one of the things I wanted to get more practice on, and really haven't been successful. Obviously, Vance has been out with his baby and sort of.
Oh, yeah, the baby. That's great.
Yeah, but that's something I still want to put, you know, as a way I can help him and then also help he and I hold each other accountable and just sort of embed that into our weekly rhythm. But also the high-level action planning and really with working, getting some coaching from Jeff on how I can get, you know, improve myself there. And really we started out with rather than just going directly to how to create a high-level action plan for the next year, we talked about, managing the work that we do now and sort of in establishing your the system for how we're going to execute on the plan, because we kind of talked about, yeah, we want to develop the action plan, and we really want to develop, it's great to have a great plan, but how are we going to execute on that? So really the first step that we took was kind of breaking down the work that comes into play into three separate buckets of, things that fall into a structured meeting that are the must-dos every day, things that, are ad hoc that need to be kind of checked off a to-do list that come, that we really can't plan on, and then also the things that creating space on how we are working on the business a little bit outside. And so that was kind of the first framework. We, thought, how am I going to execute on this plan once we get the plan? And I think, once we move forward, I Jeff's going to, kind of help me learn how to, plan out further in advance and really nail the more high-level action planning.
Cool. Yeah, and just to, as a preview for the rest of this call, I think almost everybody expressed some interest by way of how they scored on learning a little bit more about high-level action plans. And so I'd like to just at least go, over that at some point for this call. So thank you for sharing that.
I do want to add, though, I thought the self-assessment was pretty valuable. And I thought, if you did that earlier in the year, we kind of wait until the end of the year, but at least for me, when I sat down and I really did a self-assessment, that, kind of stood out. I was like, man, these are things that are clearly would be beneficial. I need to put some, and I could have put, practice more on about 12 items on the list, and so it was just kind of, it was an eye-opening experience to evaluate myself.
Okay, that's really useful feedback, and so would you, and I'll open this up to the broader group, but I'm specifically directing at you since we're talking about it. Would you have been okay taking that self-assessment once a quarter, or just maybe like an earlier check-in and then this check-in at the end?
I don't know if you do it every quarter, but I just thought that, and certainly not to the full level, but if I evaluated myself on the things that I learned each quarter, and that's, it just, to me, it really opened up my eyes to, I just thought it was a pretty useful tool, so I would advocate having it more frequently.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. Peter.
So since I came up with my assignments, which are personal 2x2, and I believe I'm probably going to go with roadmaps instead of focus areas as my second assignment, the only real progress I've made is just starting to track the different thoughts and ideas I have on accomplishing my goals. I still have a meeting that I have set up with Jeff once he flies in next Monday, and we're going to dive a little deeper into that. So it's not necessarily substantial progress that's been made, but I have made progress in the way of starting to really think about the different things I need to do to accomplish my goals. And then realizing that instead of focus areas, I think roadmaps is a better tool for me, because it's easier for me to look out over a year period and see the progression of the things I need to do over the course of the year to accomplish my goals. So I think that going with roadmaps is going to make it a little more clear for me to see what I need to do by when to hit some of my goals by the end of the year.
Okay. That's helpful. Ramon.
So for me, I like, as well as Jeremy, I like the assessment because it's an eye opener in terms of where your strengths lie, or and actually what opportunities that you do have, and it kind of lays out all the content. I chose weekly focusing and leverage team management with IRTA, and the reason. reason that I went with those is because I know personally I allow myself to get knocked off my rhythm if something comes up and allow myself to get interrupted. And sometimes I know that that will you know, keep me from getting to my end goal in line. So what I've gained so far through my conversations with Jeff is identifying which tools I know that are going to help me get myself situated and more organized to establish the discipline that I need to do an effective focusing, you know, and cleaning out, scaling down so I can scale up and have a quality focusing session with myself and for the business and work on the business, and to include, you know, using a journal and using a, you know, my electronic technology, my phone, which has the capability of doing a little bit of everything, cleaning up my daily calendar, cleaning out my emails, and then start actioning things. Like we alluded to maybe a week or two ago when we were discussing, I'm a person, I never delete my emails and things like that just for the sake of always having that if I want to ever recall. And so, but cleaning all that crap out, putting it in the proper buckets where it needs to go. Another thing that I got from Jeff is you know, putting three buckets in place, you know, one for daily rhythms, two for the ad hoc, unpredictable things, and three, actions to support my long-term initiative, things, what I'm going to do. And so I'm learning that that's going to be very useful for me, although I'm not as disciplined in that action just yet. I mean, we're only a week or two into it, two to three weeks into it, I'm sorry. But I know that long-term, if I keep myself disciplined and committed to doing this, I see the long-term gain that's going to be in place for me. And I realize that it's not until I'm able to hold myself accountable for that weekly focus and my daily focus that I won't be able to put an effective plan in place for, you know, ERTA and team management, because it really starts with me. And so that's where I'm at. It's the self-accountability, self-awareness piece that is starting to really hit me. That as good as that, the quality time that I could spend with myself building that plan and being able to zoom out, to come back in, will be a very impactful one, the quality of input that I have for my team and my part of the business. So that's my biggest takeaway at this point.
Okay. Great. Steve?
Biggest area is leverage team management principles. There's a couple, there's three specific areas within those. One is the idea of tops down and bottoms up. I'm working more on really just trying to give direction. I think in the past I find myself giving the directions and then also telling them how to do it and giving them the details. And I need to do less directing of that and create the abstraction so they can have the room to grow. So tops down, bottoms up, I'm using more roadmaps. The other area is finding some hidden resources in the company. I think there's some opportunity. Jeremy and I have worked with some folks in the sales team, as well as some folks in accounting, that we are giving some opportunities on things like marketing and culture. But I do think there's some we often look is that everybody's full, but I think sometimes they need some new projects just to re-energize them, because just doing the job over and over and over and over can just become a little stale for them. So giving them things that they feel that they're making an impact on the company or impact on other tribe members, I think they can take a sense of pride and fulfillment in doing so company as opposed to always just being updated what to do. So the hidden resources, and then whole idea of assign, don't do, again, is in relationship also to the tops down, bottoms up, is that I'm really starting to see the long-term impact of assign, don't do, and how that shuts down the critical thinking and creativity that we really need. So those are the areas within leverage team management. Inquiry was another one, but I think I'm using a lot of inquiry and will continue to be using a lot of inquiry in the practice of leverage team management. So I listed inquiry and leverage team management but separately, but they actually are really integrated. And then the other area that I am working on is IRTA, and especially right now, the two areas is accounting and sales. Jeremy's done a really good job of taking so much of the stuff, customer care, funding, a lot of the one-on-one conversations with the team. So he's done a real good job of stepping up in those areas where I was finding I was very involved in the actual decision-making and approving, and I'm doing way less decision-making and also way less approving. On the accounting side, I'm still doing a lot of approving, but they are doing, especially Randy, is doing a really good job, probably making the most progress of all of them. Tony's actually doing pretty good as well, in doing the reviewing reviewing and deciding, and then just relying on me for approval. But I feel that even though I'm still involved in a lot of approval of the accounting process, they're starting to develop the thinking and challenging of certain expenses and vendor relationships that where I think over the next 6 months or so, I think they can be there on a lot of things.
Nice. Have you guys objectified those IRTA adjustments to reflect what you're talking about? Like, is there somewhere that you guys have written down that, you know, sort of reflects what you're approving versus what other people are deciding or informing on?
Not really. No.
It may be helpful, right, as a suggestion, to have it objectified, because then you at least know there might be a pattern, or you know what the next step would be to get further leverage and where the training might need to be. Because if you remember on IRTA, every single part of that is training for the next role, right? So deciders eventually become approvers, and reviewers eventually become deciders and informers, you know. So if that really holds true, then having it written down and understanding what the path might be for others to develop, and also knowing, you know, hey, this is an area where I find myself probably approving more than I'd like, and I'd like to transition it, it just objectifying it might really be an unlocking step.
So, Ruth, just a clarification. Am I hearing what you're saying is, for someone like Steve, for instance, to capture the things that he's currently deciding, whether it's repetitive or one-offs, that he would prefer to have someone else and push down, or approving that he would prefer to push down, and capturing those, and then that will enable us to think about, you know, moving that decision-making down the tree.
Yeah, exactly, right. So you guys mentioned vendor relations, right? Is there a natural delineation on which vendor relations you tend to do more of, you get more involved in versus allowing the team to do more? Is there a size of, you know, of a payable or a receivable? Is there some sort of delineation there where you sort of say, okay, you know, I think that the team can handle it up to this point, and then I usually get involved after that.
Yeah, there's reoccurring vendors that are less I'm less involved in. The only thing I do there is a lot of times accounting will get in places. Oh, it's a reoccurring. We pay this every month. Let's just go ahead and pay it. And sometimes I have to check in and say, hold on one second. Are we still using it? Yes. Okay, great. Sometimes they'll say, you know, I don't know. And they'll check with them. They go, oh, no, we don't use that anymore. So I've got to work there. There's also some areas where saying, yes, we're still using it. Like one of the ones last week was FedEx. Yes, we're still using FedEx because, of course, we need that. I said, but when's the last time we've looked at pricing for that? Been over a year. Well, we've doubled our business in a year. So I said, you know, have we looked at price for it? So there's some things that, there's certain reoccurring charges that we always use, like our software that, you know, Sagan is another one that we're going to use that, and that's the same bill all the time, and they know to pay it. There's other ones where we're using it every single month, but the usage can change or the dependency or need can change, so that's where I'm a little bit more involved. And then the other area I'm involved is on the ones that have variable expenses. What I'm working with them on now is if it's, look at the 90-day average, and then if it's, is it below or above that and why? Because if it's above it, you know, is that just an increase in the business? And if so, that should be a signal to drive those, you know, is there volume discounts we can achieve? If there's below it, are we sure we captured all the expenses, and are we missing an invoice or anything like that, or did it go down, and if it truly went down, what did we do differently? And then things like, okay, if we were able to do these actions to get this bill down, what are those actions, and how can those actions be applied to other areas of the business to get those costs down? So those are the things I'm working with them on, but haven't really documented it. And a lot of it, too, is I've got to find the right person to be able to do that. And Randy might be able to be that person eventually, but Jeff and I are really looking at the whole accounting department for 2016 and how to build that. So, it's a work in progress. But, yeah, I do think there's value in writing it, capturing these things.
It's interesting, right, because the stuff you're talking about that you're working with them on is exactly what you should be doing in terms of mentoring the decider on how to be a better decider, right? And I think some of the things that you're doing in terms of just reviewing which vendors to use, et cetera, I mean, as a process, what if we said vendors under a certain amount of annual spend, that review process actually gets pushed into its own IRTA format, and then you're the approver for some period of time, and then you step out of that process, and now you're really only dealing with vendors of a certain size? I mean, there's a lot of ways you can shift that once you actually document it, but I think documenting it at least helps put the puzzle pieces on the table.
I totally agree. We should make a better effort to document it. I think at this stage, my focus has been not on the dollar amount, but the actual practice and mindset. It could be a small dollar amount, but just being able to practice that and be able to say, okay, yes, this bill only changed by, you know, $75, but if I can learn how to understand why it changed, because it could be $75 could be a small amount, but the percentage, right? And so one of the things we do in our financial review is says, okay, this bill went up by 42%, but our sales only went up 15%. Why? Right? And so they're starting to look at the correlation between, it's not necessarily just a dollar amount, because as volume goes up, naturally dollar amount will go up on some of the expenses. So we just have to tie, is it coming at the same pace? Because what we don't want to do is grow our expenses at a faster rate than our volume, right? So just working with them and getting the cycles in, and that's where, you know, you can see how all three, inquiry, leverage team management, and IRTA are all fully integrated. So I'm using a lot of the assign, don't do, and the top-down, bottoms-up stuff in this whole IRTA with accounting. I think what I need to do is work with Jeff to figure out how to really embed this. I will capture it, but then I've still got to find the person to really be owning it.
Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, honestly, a lot of stuff you're doing is exactly right in terms of teaching and really getting the process of how you think about these things out.
It's a lot of fun.
Somebody. Huh?
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, if you're successful at it, you get a lot of love. Thank you for sharing. Jeff, can you walk through, I think a lot of your sort of next steps were actually integrated, and people have already mentioned it, but can you just give us the sort of high level on your self-assignments?
Yeah, it's really working with the team and through that really helping myself, which is, I think if you summarize it, it's what I said earlier, it's using, identifying the right tools to really enable us to both execute on the day-to-day, what I call a daily rhythm, with also being able to execute on the development plans that we identify. So often in what we've done in the past is, you know, we've created great plans, but being too busy to execute on them. And, or we've created, great plans. And while someone's working on that, the day-to-day results go down the tube. So, what I'm doing is working with, Jeremy Ramone, and the purchasing team in trying to use both, as Jeremy said earlier, you know, it's not just the planning tools of, you know, 2x2s and, initiative roadmaps and that good stuff, but it's also, day-to-day practices of, structured meetings and, IRTA and, you know, to-do lists and so forth. That how do you organize that where you create the space to do both? And, you know, that's the general theme that goes across. And one of the early wins, I was joined with Ramon yesterday in our meeting, and he and Jeremy are already going this route, but I was promoting the idea that they actually create the formal buddy system that Peter and Vance used to great effectiveness. And because what they're actually doing is exactly the same. I mean, that, you know, they're almost mirror images. So the idea of Jeremy and Ramon working as buddies to develop both the methodologies and the plans, planning methodologies, is I think going to be a big win. So that's really it in a nutshell. So it's and working with Peter on his personal 2x2 that will then lead to an initiative roadmap for him that encompasses both professional and personal objectives.
Awesome. Thank you for that. I appreciate you. Just the role of integrator of sorts seems to be pretty apparent, at least with respect to these assignments. It's nice to see it all coming together.
And by helping, you know, I mean, obviously it certainly impacts my personal ability to be able to use those tools more effectively as well. So I'm just using, if you like, I'm just being selfish in using others as a vehicle to do that.
Fair.
I suppose I should have said smart, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, as the next topic, I wanted to check in. So it sounds like the retreat stuff, one of the things I'd mentioned in the email was just checking in on the retreat, making sure that the prep you guys have there, do you guys have any questions on some of the tools and how they would apply, and then going using that as a springboard into high-level action plan. So I'll do the check-in here, which is, are there any tools that you guys would like to cover in service of the retreat that's upcoming in a week or so? And I'll take that silence to mean that we feel pretty good about the things we're practicing with for now. And then let's jump into high-level action plans, which, again, was a pretty common self-assessed sort of area of interest. That's what I'll call it. So with that, can anybody tell me what the high-level action plan's meant to do?
Plan at the high level.
Fundamentally, to have a plan at a very high level.
Right? Nailed it. Session done. Yeah.
Recorded.
It is meant to... go ahead.
You need to come in and teach that to the next ILP. We're happy to do it.
Yeah. That's perfect. You guys walk in, say, high-level action plan. Planning at the highest level, drop the mic, walk right back out. Lunch is served.
Boom.
Yeah, you're right. It is meant to plan at a high level, but, you know, with respect to, what's the difference between a high-level action plan and a focus area?
Well, that's the thing I was going to say. You know, it's really, for me, one of the struggles is when I'm thinking about this high-level plan, not getting too deep into the details, not getting too deep into the how we're going to do it every step of the way, and that's the thing I have to resist as I'm looking at more high level initiatives.
Go ahead.
I said I also think one of the things the high level plan does is it ties more of the key initiatives into the imperatives, which the roadmap and the 2x2 and other longer-term planning tools don't do. So you have kind of your imperative. You're using more questioning to make sure that you're lining up with the imperative and to make sure you're not getting off focus, that everything is linked back.
Okay. Yeah. I think that there's opportunities directly connecting imperatives to the high-level action plan of what you're actually going to be doing day to day. There are really just three components, right? What, who, and when for a high-level action plan. I think you're right in terms of the tendency to get very granular. It's easy to get really granular and actually make this into a Gantt chart, which is not, right? And one of the things I typically try to limit people, it's a false limiter, but it's a limiter nonetheless, is keeping it on one page. So why would I want people to just keep it on one page?
It forces you to, you know, be direct and not, you know, not get too run on and too many details in there.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, if you can walk into a project meeting or initiative meeting with a one-pager on where you're at and where you're going, it's better than what I've seen, which is an Excel sheet zoomed out to 40% with a million steps on there. And you get lost pretty quickly, right? In which situation would you want to actually have more granular level of detail, out of curiosity?
Or a plan that requires that level of specificity.
Yeah, I mean, all plans have some level of specificity, right? I think that one of the things I usually use as a rule of thumb on when I would want to have a really, really kind of an odd level of detail for something specific is when I have a lot of dependencies.
Yeah.
Right? I want to call that out in a way that's efficient. And usually that's when I use something that might stand out. You know, in the examples that we'd given you guys for the ILP, we had this restructure pricing programs, enhanced technical skills training, monitor adoption, monitor results. There's a bunch of stuff underneath all of those things, right? Areas where I think we have actual dependencies is where I would start to go into the next level of sub-bullets. We don't do that necessarily in this illustration, but you can see that the illustration only goes to like almost like a quarterly level of detail. And so that's one area. It's just where I have other people who need to be hyper aware of the thing that we need to get done. And I need their help to actually get it done.
I think for me, Rube, it's about being very conscious of the level of detail required to ensure that you are confident you can deliver on that step. And you're right, you know, software projects are a lot of interdependencies across actions and people require, you know, that sort of level of detail. But for our project, I think, you know, what I'm pushing again, you know, Jeremy and Ramon, is let's make sure we go down to the level of detail that says, okay, we know how we're going to take that next step. Right? And that level of detail may actually only be one bullet point, you know, but it for a lot of hours. But then others, you need to sort of push yourself, I think, to that point where you say, okay, I know how that's going to happen. And I know where the resources are coming from. I know how I'm going to allocate my time. And being confident about that you've got that appropriate level of detail, because going to infinite level of detail is just as destructive as having no detail at all, in my view, you know, because you're right, you know, you can just get where the plan becomes the reason, not the project.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's interesting, right, because a lot of people think you put a high-level plan together, or a high-level action plan together, and then it's done. But I often use it to where I actually blow out some of the more broader points as we approach them for that very reason, is to just be able to get some foresight into what I might actually be missing or what I don't know, actually know I might be able to, you know, sort of deliver on the time that I said I was going to deliver it. And I continue to evolve it as through that sort of timeline adjustment. Another big value here, right, this is like a super simple, guys, this is actually, you know, in concept, it's pretty simple. Just actually put down what you're going to do, who's going to do it, who's going to lead it, and then when you're going to get it accomplished, right? There's no rocket science there. This ties back to a lesson that Ramon's articulated earlier today, which is the discipline to just sit down and do it ahead of the actual project, as opposed to developing it in the middle, or just jumping right into an actual project. That's the magic, right? I mean, if you can actually start an initiative and say, look, here's at a very high level what we're going to go do, and here's the rough path that I think we're going to go down, that at least slows down the process enough to think through some of these things. How many of you guys have experience where you got an initiative, you just jump right into doing the work, and then you end up having to backtrack because you forgot a few steps or you didn't think about a couple critical interdependencies? Does that, any of that sound familiar?
Sure, all the time.
Hey, Ruth, if we have the 2x2 for the company, the department, and the personal 2x2, and in on the company and the department, you have an owner assigned to it, then you do a roadmap, then you do a focus area map, which really gets into the details of who, what, when. Where does this high-level action plan, I mean, it sounds like a lot of work where if you got the 2x2 and the roadmap and the focus area map, can't you get the initiative done with those things, or do you need to introduce a fourth tool?
No, you don't need to introduce a fourth tool. I think you can get the initiative done with those things, right? I actually look at focus areas as an interim step between the roadmap and a high-level action plan. You know, me personally, I typically don't do a lot of focus areas because the amount of detail that goes into a focus area, I would rather just put some dates to it and use it that way as a roadmap, or not as a roadmap, but as a high-level action plan. So I tend to not use focus areas as much, right? Now, if there's a high level of complexity or if there's something about the initiative that actually requires more focus area type work, then I'll do it. But, no, I don't think you need...
You use 2x2, roadmap, and high level action plan, and then...
Yeah. That's typically what I use.
I can see that in a more project-based initiative, but when you're looking at production... initiatives. I actually like the focus area a little bit more, and the high level seems like it does seem like another layer, another tool that also tells you the same sort of things that you're getting. You can find on the 2x2 and the roadmaps and get down to the focus areas. So I think when we talk about our high level action planning, it does seem like another layer on top of, you know, it is the, you know, the what, the when, and the who, but the sort of the way we're preparing for the retreat and using 2x2s with owners on there and roadmaps of how it's going to lay out over the quarters and then drilling down further into focus areas, I think it sounds like a high level action plan and a, you know, really clear path of how we're going to accomplish our year end goals.
Yeah, and if that works for you guys, then go for it, right? I mean, you got to liken all of these tools to clubs in a golf bag. What's the right one, or what's the right combination of them to get us where we need to be, right? And so if you're adjusting the focus areas to maybe include initials and some dates, that's no different than, you know, using a 9-iron for a drive or whatever it is, right? I mean, you're just adjusting the tool to serve the purpose, and that's perfectly fine. The bigger win here is that you're using the tool and you're thinking through things ahead of time as opposed to just jumping right into them. And I get a lot of pushback on high-level action plans versus focus areas, so that's typically where I go, which is what's the difference. And in reality, you know, the difference is probably a low level of nuance. And to your all point, you guys have a set of initiatives that the focus areas tends to work really well for you with. Great. Then don't feel encumbered and don't feel obligated to use a high-level action plan unless it really calls for it. I'll tell you that most of the people who go, as you go further and further down in an organization, high-level action plans will tend to resonate with people a little bit more because it looks more familiar. There's a sequential nature to it to some degree. There's a clear sort of what's my thing, right, if their name is on there. So I wouldn't be surprised if you end up morphing it a little bit as you start to push the stuff down further and further. But at the executive team level, if focus areas work, then use them.
Hey, Rube, this is Peter. I may be off, but it seems to me like high-level action plan may be more useful if we're introducing a new initiative or something we've never done before. Would that be where it's probably most useful?
It can be, right? So in the materials we sent you guys for the actual work session, I don't know if you guys remember that arrow up and down.
Yep.
And it had all the different work structuring tools on there, right? So that's typically what I would use as the guide of what I would want to use and when, which is just levels of complexity potentially or levels of required detail for a given initiative. You guys might find that you're in deep into an initiative and there's one portion of it that actually serves well to use a high-level action plan. Then use that. But it's not, I mean, it might be a breakout of a specific focus area, right? I'm getting integrated really quickly here, but I wouldn't be just encumbered by saying only new initiatives we're going to use a high-level action plan, because the focus areas, at least how you guys have adopted them, might serve you just as well. And it might be more consistent, might be the way people are already getting trained on them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So what else? I mean, because this is broader than just high-level action plans, at least starting to move a little bit more broadly into just work structuring and what's the right thing to do. It sounds like you guys primarily use focus areas. Let me ask you this. Have you guys taught focus areas to anybody in the organization outside of the executive team?
Well, sometimes I use, you know, a focus area, so to speak, some of the finance managers and say, you know, I'll ask them to list out, you know, the things that, you know, we kind of talk about what is it that we're most trying to accomplish and what are the things we need to do to get there. So basically that is creating a focus area of, you know, these are the things that to roll up into us being meeting this target or goal. And so that usually starts with me, you know, I don't roll it out as this is a focus area, but list out the, you know, the five things that you think are most important, and then let's talk about, you know, what priority there are and how they're tied up into the goal we're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Which is helpful, right? But in that situation, are you the primary owner and driver of developing that?
Yes.
Okay. And I think that's appropriate, but at some point in the next 12, 18 months, is there someone you can actually teach focus areas to and then help them develop it and drive it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So, again, that's the shift, right, from you having to hold the energy in space. Right now you're being asked to hold the energy in space, which is great. You should be. You got to get cycles with it. You got to get reps with the actual tool and learn the nuances. You learn, as we learned earlier today from some of our wins, teaching somebody any of these tools gives you another cycle in a different way because they're going to ask questions that maybe you don't think about or maybe you already know or maybe you're already anchored to, but you need to articulate, whatever that may be. It also achieves a goal, which is getting them to actually hold it. Now you're a step removed, and you can be in the more advisor role, in the approver role, for lack of, you know, sort of applying this but not really applying it, as opposed to the holder of that space and energy. And what that should do is free you up to do other things. What else on these, you know, so if you guys remember this whole work structuring approach, we had sort of, as a broad category, we had discovery, we had light structuring and heavy structuring. And heavy structuring would be really time sensitive, very, very, very complex types of projects. A lot of times you get technical people involved or you have a lot of facilitated sort of sessions on surfacing all the things you guys need to be aware of and who the independencies are. Is any of this ringing a bell in terms of how we've organized that for you?
Yeah.
So 5 minutes of prep, what is that?
Light structuring?
Huh?
Light structuring?
Yeah, it's light structuring. And what's the actual practice? Yeah, what's the process? What's the process of doing 5 minutes of prep? And don't say 5 minutes of prep.
Prepping for 5 minutes.
You write down your objectives that you want to achieve and what outcomes that you want to have.
Yeah, and that tends to be a nice little bullet for a short-term gain, especially when you go into a meeting, right? But it's not necessarily going to drive you towards a focus area roadmap. So I'll give you an example of how this ties into integrate for me. I'll go into a meeting, do 5 minutes of prep, and say, in this meeting, I'd like to come out with an integrated focus area, right? And here are the things that I think I need to be aware of. Here are the questions I need to ask of people who aren't in my group. Okay, got it. Now let me go into the meeting. That would be an example of 5 minutes of prep in service of developing a focus area. Go into the meeting. Now I start doing the work. We actually come out with the output of a focus area, which may or may not be all we need for a series of activities associated with an initiative. Right, so you can see how some of these work structuring approaches hook into each other. Focus areas developed. You guys have a pretty strong sense of focus area for your executive team. Couple junior team members are struggling with the concept because there's no real dates, or maybe there aren't enough dates, or it's not sequential, whatever it is, you could easily pop any one of the bullets on a focus area out and start to give them a little bit more detail in the form of a high level action plan. Making sense? And again, all of this is just in service of thinking things through ahead of time. So you're aware of what the gotchas are, what the roadblocks are going to be, and you guys can communicate up and downstream whether we think we're going to hit the commitments we say we're going to hit. Okay. So, that was high-level action plans, and then a little bit of work into just general work structuring. Any questions, any concerns, any thoughts?
I think that I just wanted to say, for me, the really where it starts to make sense, or when you see it being a little bit more successful, and by that I mean you see, some of the outcomes that you wanted, and you also you're feeling a little, personally, when you're feeling a little bit less stressed and more prepared, and you have the space, you see, like, that's when all these tools start to kind of make sense a little bit more, and how they integrate together. And so getting more and more cycles and getting more comfortable using them obviously makes them, you just have the ability to keep going with it. But right now, where we've got some of these things that are, tools that we are aware of, we've kind of put them in place and practice a little bit. When you really start to have a little success with it and you see it starting to, free you up, that's where, to me, it really drives home that, okay, these do work. I now have the confidence to use them more and more and get better and better with them. So
feel more in control as opposed to controlling you and you're not firefighting.
Right. And in the past where, like in Ramon and I talked about this yesterday, in the past we've had a retreat out on the calendar and we know it's coming and we still got these things to do, but actually kind of, getting on the tools, creating the space to work on them, and actually what helped me is getting, putting this out there and talking about it with Jeff, hearing some feedback, coming back to it and kind of reworking it.
How much do you engage your teams when you're doing the retreat prep and stuff and getting their, input in some of these things?
For me, more on the how are we going to do this, so what are the action steps and who's going to own them, but I'd love to be, I think we'd be better served to engage them early, so even when we're talking about these, what are the initiatives that are going to enable us to hit the KPIs?
Getting their ideas first.
Yeah.
As opposed to getting them to review,
Because that's what the 2x2 on the wall is for me, is when as soon as we get the year's goals, now I'm going to them and say, okay, this is where we need to end up. And so what we need to do, like Jeremy and I talked about, is throw everything up there, everything we know we want to do that we have to do to get to there. Now, once we, whether they're needs, desires, wishes, hopes, and dreams, throw them all up there. Now let's start shaking off what's real, what can we do? And I try to do that at least a month or so out, so I'm preparing, so I know, okay, well, this is reality for us, and how can we do it? What can we do, and what will we need help doing? And so I try to do it as soon as I get the goal, but then, just knowing where we want to be. Because the reality is, we can come up with the plan, but the tribe members are the ones who are putting most of the action together to get it accomplished. And so if I got their buy-in and they had their input into it, we can be more successful.
Yeah, because
it builds pride.
What I find is you can have a great idea and get their compliance, and that won't take you as far as a lesser idea that they've come up with with their commitment.
Right.
And if they're committed to it, they can take an A-level commitment on a B idea and go a lot further than an A idea with a B-level commitment, right? And so, obviously, if it's a C idea, you want to... I think it's helpful to... And plus, they have a different perspective. They operate with a different view of the field, and...
They own the outcome. They're part of it.
Well, and they also, you guys are the head coaches with that sideline view, right? But you've got players on the field that are seeing a totally different view of the game, even though it's the same game. They're under center, and they can see a different angle of the same game, so they'll pick up on things that necessarily you don't see. And that's where the whole... ideas, getting the different perspectives.
I think Rupe, one of the things just for me, the that you touched on earlier, and I think the big takeaway, and I recommend to the team, is, you know, Sagan has given us a huge number of tools, and your golf analogy, I think, is a good one. Is, you know, it's better to go out with half a set of clubs, you know, half a bag, and learn to use those well, and find them, extremely helpful, rather than go out with all clubs in your bag, even though you can't hit a driver, or you can't use a high elevation lofted wedge, you know. So it's better for us to pick, for instance, for our planning, most things we do lend themselves just to three levels: the 2x2, the initiative roadmap. A lot of them stop there, and then some then go to a more detailed, just high level WWW framework as three levels. And it's, I think, what I'd advocate is that the team, you know, pick the tools that they're going to get really proficient with and find useful. But then on a regular basis, you know, I've been doing this in the last couple of weeks a lot, is get the Sagan file out and then kind of flip through it and say, you know, just remind myself of some of the other tools, particularly when you face a particular, you know, problem or challenge or opportunity. You know, you sort of say, well, you know, what, just remind myself of the tools that I'm not using that might be helpful in this instance. And, you know, if we collectively do that, you know, we'll be selective in the tools we're using, but then, you know, keep ourselves reminded of what tools are available should we ever need them. You know, that I think is the big practice we've got to try and keep going for the next 2 or 3 years.
Awesome, guys.
All right. Well, thanks, Rupe. Really appreciate it.
Likewise.
Thank you for their participation. Keep up the good work.
We'll do. Thank you, guys. I hope you have a great retreat. I'll connect with Jay post that.
Sounds good. Thanks, Rupe.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye. Bye.